very good afternoon to you. The time is 12:07, and you're tuned to Midday Matters right here on WBOI. This, of course, the Outer Spaces edition of our program, when we ask you to give us a call with your plant and garden questions and your tips as well. Maybe you've found something to inspire or entertain or inform our listeners. We'd love to hear it this hour. Do give us a call, 260-452-1185, or toll free at 1-800-471-9264. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall. That's facebook.com/middaymatters. Or send us a tweet at Midday Matters. Lots of ways for you to get a hold of us this hour, and we certainly hope you will. One of the people who hopes you'll get in touch this hour, it's Doug Hackbarth from Broadview Florist. Doug, welcome to the program once again.
Good afternoon, Sean. Always good to be here.
And yeah,
what a gorgeous sky. You know, this is what we call a Mackinac sky. I gotta bring it.
He had once per program. Once per program. This we are not affiliated with the Michigan Tourist Board.
No, but man, this is a beautiful, beautiful sky. And even though it's cold out, when that sun shines like that, it feels great.
Well, I'll tell you what, last night's sunset was gorgeous as well. Another chilly, but a very nice day here.
Yep,
so,
yep.
Now, Doug, while we're waiting for some folks to get in touch with us, I know you brought a topic I just want to start on here. And a lot of this time of year, a lot of folks are having visitors in
yes,
their homes.
Yes, they are. You bet. Stink bugs.
Ugh.
You know, my mother-in-law is just like on a rampage against stink bugs. They just drive her crazy. And she says, man, and even if you smash them, they smell horrible. I mean, just horrible. And so, you know, if stink bugs is a problem in your house, call in here and tell us about it. I've got some home remedies for getting rid of them.
And we'd love to hear your remedies as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, right. See if anyone else has any idea. Of course, you could always whack them with a fly swatter, but then they stink. So,
hence the name.
And one of the remedies is, instead of killing them, it's using a lemon juice that will solution that will actually keep them out of your house. You have to spray it around the windowsills, the door jams, that type of thing. And I have a little formula here for that.
While we're looking for the formula here, I would just want to invite our listeners one more time. We're on Facebook.com, at Midday Matters on Twitter, or our local line, 260-452-1185. Doug, are you finding the...
I have it.
Finding the recipe there?
Sure, I sure do. You mix lemon juice, one ounce of lemon juice and a half an ounce of vinegar into an 8-ounce bottle. Fill it up the rest of the way with just regular old water. Shake it, and then spray the windowsills, spray the door jams, wherever these stinky bugs are coming into your house. And, you know, we see them. I saw one 2 days ago in the flower shop, and, you know, you just wonder, they can't possibly survive, although we haven't had that much cold weather. And so you'd think they'd be dormant in the cold weather, but it hasn't been that cold, so they're still out and about.
Well, I know a lot of folks, I just talked with a few friends at home who are having that problem as well. So hopefully they can get some lemon juice and vinegar together and get rid of them.
Right.
I know that'd keep me away.
Right. And then there was this hairdresser who had put in her 2 cents worth that... at the hairdressing place, these stink bugs would come in, and she hits them with good-smelling hairspray and basically kills them
I suppose that'd do the trick.
Simple thing you have in your house without going out and buying chemicals and having to mix them and worry about it.
Looks like we have a caller on the line here, and of course we want you to join us this hour, either by phone or other digital means. The number is here, 260-452-1185, or toll-free at 800-471-9264. That's if you have a plant or garden question, maybe a tip to share with us, or a stink bug story you want to share with our listeners this hour. Let's open the phones and go to Chris. Chris, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Oh, thank you. I brought my geraniums in, and I have a philodendron in my office. and they become real leggy.
Right.
So my question is, do I trim them all the way back? That means take all the leaves off, or do I leave some leaves so that they have a means of, oh, getting food from the sun?
Well, now, if we're talking about the geranium, I'd cut it clear back. It will sprout out new stems, and it'll grow.
Okay.
And the problem is, you don't really want to grow it in the wintertime. It doesn't grow well in the wintertime, as you're finding out. It will grow thin and spindly and pale, because I keep harping about no fertilizer. So it'll get pale. And the idea of keeping the geraniums around till next year is you bring them in, you cut them way back, and then you basically run them extremely dry. I mean, when it looks dry, wait another week. And then give it a good thorough watering, and then it's going to be 3, 4, 5 weeks before you even think of watering it again, maybe even 6 to 8 weeks before you water it again. Give it a sunny spot if you can, and keep it as close to the window as you can, which is a cool spot. So you basically want to run it bright and cool and dry, okay? If you run it warm and damp and bright, it will grow fast because of the warmth, because of the moisture. So run it dry, that slows it down. Cool, that slows it down. And actually, this is always one of those funny opposite thinking ideas, is if you run it bright, that slows it down too, but it makes it grow healthier. When you put something in a low lit area, it tends to stretch, searching for light.
Oh, yeah.
You put something in a bright spot, it doesn't have to stretch searching for light. So what it does is it actually grows slower and healthier and thicker and greener, all the things that you want it to do. So it's a funny thing. People often think more light means faster growth. It means healthier growth, but certainly not faster growth. Sometimes too fast is not good.
Okay, and then I have a philodendron from my
office. Yes, now the philodendron, you should trim it back. Hopefully there'll be a few leaves left after you do, but I'd cut it back quite a ways. How long is your philodendron?
Oh, probably about 12 inches.
12 inches long?
Long, right.
Yeah, and is it in a hanging basket or just a pot?
It's in a pot.
Pot? Well, I would cut it back to maybe 4 inches. And then let it will branch out and grow. Here's the problem with a lot of plants, especially vines. If you just cut the tips off, they'll branch out at the tip, right where you cut it, and it'll look silly because you'll still have all that empty space in the center, and it will not fill out unless you cut the plant back and force the branching to come out from closer to the center of the pot, and then you'll have a full plant again. But now the philodendron, you're not going to run that as dry. You're going to run that just like you would any normal house plant, as much light as possible, even though philodendrons can tolerate shade. The key word here is tolerate. It's not like. They don't like shade. They tolerate it. And, of course, in the wintertime, there's just by far too much shade. So keep it in a bright spot, warmth, regular household temperatures. Water it probably, you know, once a week just seems too much for almost anything in the wintertime, except maybe peace lilies. They like water. So water it when it needs it. It might be, instead of 7 days, it might be 10 to 12 days.
So I'm hearing you say keep a couple leaves on it.
Yeah, try to keep about 4 inches. Hopefully there'll be leaves after you do that. If there isn't any, that's okay. It'll still branch out and develop new ones.
Great. Yeah. Thank you much.
Uh-huh.
Chris, we appreciate the call. Have a good day.
You too.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. 260-452-1185 is the local line. If you have a plant or garden question, or maybe a tip or a stink bug story to share with us as well, you can also call us toll-free, of course, at 1-800-471-9264. Doug, we had a few folks post on our Facebook page. They had questions. This was before the show got going. Comment from Will, can small evergreens be planted in pots in a partially shaded area? If so, what recommendations are there for types of soil or drainage issues that you'd give?
Well, I assume he means for spring and summer, and certainly you could do that in a partially shaded area. It'd be fine. And you can do it early in the season, you know, even while it's fairly cold out. You get whenever you can get a hold of them in the springtime, you can plant them, stick them out. If the smaller the pot, the more often you'll have to water. That's always true of everything. And, of course, the bigger the pot, the more dangerous it is because you might overwater and the soil stays wet for long periods of time. So that's why the right size pot's always a good thing. But, yes, he could do that. And keeping them in a shady spot is fine. They'll hold up probably the entire summer, the whole season long. But at some point, like in the wintertime, I don't know if he lives in an apartment and he just wants it on the patio or what his plan is. It's always best to get them in the ground, if possible, in the winter. Otherwise, keep it close up to the house where heat escapes and it keeps it from freezing too hard. I have some potted shrubbery outside the flower shop that I look at and I think, oh, Doug, you need to do something with this shrubbery because, you know, you just leave it out here. It's going to eventually die. I can't even water it because, you know, my hose is disconnected, folks, like yours should be. And I really don't have a good water source. I need to get buckets of water, carry them out and water them that way. But better yet, smarter plan, I should just dig some holes and drop them in there. Then it would be much more maintenance free. Wow. And so, but I would leave them outside. Warmth of the house is not a good thing for a shrubbery.
All right. We appreciate the question, Will, and very good luck. We have a few more questions on Facebook and via email from Anthony and Anita. We'll get to those in just a few minutes here. First, though, we have a caller on the line. We have Sue with us. Sue, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Oh, hi. Hi,
Thank
Sue. You for taking my call. I love this show.
Thank you.
I listen to it every week.
Oh,
I
you.
Have a solarium, but my problem is I have too many plants for the space, you know. So I have a couple I kind of put down in the basement because they're kind of ugly this time of year.
Mm-hmm.
And one is a spider plant. It does really well out on my deck in the warm weather.
Mm-hmm.
When I bring it in, should I treat it the way you're talking about, what was the plant she said? Oh, a philodendron and a...
And a geranium.
And geranium, yeah. Should I cut it way back?
Well, you know, the spider plant keeps growing and it looks good, but it will outgrow a hanging basket.
It's not a hanging, it's...
just a regular
pot. It's in
pot.
A pot, yeah,
well,
on a
They
stand.
Will outgrow whatever pot they're in.
It's ugly, though.
In a season.
Yeah, and all the leaves are turning brown, and
yes.
I just...
And don't let the brown leaves bother you, because it's not that big a deal. However, you have babies on it, right?
Well, a few.
A few.
A few, not as many as when it's outside and looking great.
Yes,
you know?
Well, generally when a spider plant is mistreated, that's when it produces a lot of babies.
Oh.
It sounds like you're mistreating it, but where's the babies? That's what I want to know. That means running it dry, almost no fertilizer. This
mm-hmm.
is what forces babies to come out of these things. And what we have, I have some old spider plants. And I have new spider plants, and the new ones look much better than the old ones. And so the one gal says, well, what are we going to do with these old spider plants? I said, well, just keep them because they've got like 3 million babies on them. We're going to harvest all the babies, make new baskets, and throw the original plants out. Because once they get that big, you either are forced to go to bigger pots or just give up. Now, a lot of times, just like when I make these new hanging baskets, I'll put 5 to 7 plants in that pot. So you could take the old plants out of the pot, take a big knife, and slice that thing into 3 or 4 pieces and repot them back into a pot in the same size that the original one's in. And you could start that way. But I think starting them from babies is better.
Okay.
If you do it the other way, you're going to have to pull off all those dead leaves, and just basically regrow.
Yeah, it's kind of a pain.
Yeah, it is a pain. And I would harvest babies and throw the original plants out, which is what we will do yet this winter.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Yes, thank you for calling and reminding me to do that.
Okay. More work.
That's right. That and orchids I need to get on. Right.
We appreciate the call, Sue, and the kind words as well.
Thank you.
All right.
Thanks.
Have a good day. 260-452-1185 or 800-471-9264. Those are the numbers. If you want to get a hold of us with your plant and garden question or comment this hour, we're also always taking tips for your outer spaces. And as we, on the topic that we started the show with here, Doug, we're taking some stink bug stories as well. How did you get rid of yours? And maybe we should expand that out just a little bit. If you've had unwelcome visitors in your household, what did you do? Can you offer us some tips for getting rid of them? And relatives over the holidays don't count. So.
put them in their bags just before they leave.
That's right. We do need to take a quick break here. When we return, we'll get to questions from Anita and from Anthony as well. Stay with us. It's Midday Matters.
It's time to meet museum. Meet museum.
Hi, I'm Julia Meekin. What's our pleasure this week on Meet the Music? The chanting monks from Temple Buddha Vihara, Mathis Gray, and Redemption Calling. That's Thursday night from 7 to 9 here at 89.1 FM or listen online at nipr.fm. A two-hour serving of homegrown delights here on Meet the Music.
As the Mississippi River's mouth creeps inland, Louisiana worries about what the drought upriver will mean for the Delta.
We have no idea at this point how big a river we're going to need 20 years from now to maintain the viability of this lower end.
Pushing for a Mississippi River Compact today on All Things Considered from NPR News. All Things Considered airs weekday afternoons at 4 on WBOI, Northeast Indiana Public Radio.
On Fresh Air, you'll hear conversations that you won't hear anywhere else.
Do you understand love?
Well, I understand caring. See, most of my relationships are more intellect, and to me, love is caring.
Posing questions to fascinating people like Temple Grandin and giving them the time to answer on Fresh Air.
Fresh Air, weekdays at 1 on WBOI.
Many companies seem messy. Too many meetings that run too long. Too many managers who make too much money. Different goals for different departments. Now, two business analysts argue that dysfunction is the very thing that helps your organization get the job done. I'm Neil Conan, The Org, the underlying logic of The Office. Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Tune in weekdays at 2 here on WBOI, Northeast Indiana Public Radio.
Minutes past the hour, you're tuned to Midday Matters on WBOI. I'm Sean Beter, along with Doug Hackbarth from Broadview Florist. We're very happy to be with you for this Outer Spaces edition of our program, and we want to hear from you this hour, as we do every week. 260-452-1185 if you have a plant and garden question, a tip for our listeners, or if you have a good story about unwanted invaders in your home. We started the show with stink bugs, of course, but there are lots of visitors who want a warm place to rest. How did you get rid of them? What did you do? We want to know. The toll-free line, of course, is 800-471-9264. And if you'd like to get a hold of us digitally, our Facebook page is up, facebook.com/middaymatters. You can email middaymatters@nipr.fm or get a hold of us on Twitter. Doug Hackbarth, we had another comment here from somebody on Facebook. Anthony wants to know if it's too late to trim hedges and bushes.
Well, this is just not the right time to do it. Trimming hedges and bushes. I watched Sherlock Holmes 2 weeks ago, and this person was murdered, and the one gal says, "Hey, you know who's going to have information for us? It's that lady right over there." And Sherlock looks at her and says, "Why is that?" And he says, "Because she's trimming her hedges in the middle of winter, and you're supposed to do that in June." which of course I've said a million times, mm-hmm. but sure enough, the lady was always outside watching the neighborhood, and she was like the neighborhood gossip, and that's how they figured it out. You don't trim your shrubs at this time of the year. So see, you learn things by watching silly shows like that.
Well, hey, Sherlock Holmes always always gets his criminal.
That's right.
Or at least Watson does.
So anyway, no, this is not a good time to trim shrubs. It should be done in June. That means you can do it in mid to late May. You can do it in even all of July, but center it around June somewhere.
Okay, so and, it's time to wait. Right
yeah, now. If you do it now, it's just totally wrong. If you have some dead branches or something, certainly trim those out.
Mm, all right.
But for the most part, this is not the time to trim.
All right. Anthony, we appreciate your question here. We have one more here from Anita. Anita says, hello, what is the best way to plant vegetables in clay soil? Is it best to remove and replace it with new soil, or is there another solution?
Yes, it's best not to remove and replace. However, it's good to amend. And that simply means keep the clay soil there and add to it some bulk material such as peat moss. It can be Canadian peat, it can be Michigan peat, or any of the composts. Mushroom compost is a really good one. Most people know about cow manure. Years ago, we used to sell sheep manure. You don't see that anymore, but I think that the mushroom soil compost, I've always suspected that it's horse manure, which is the second best thing for growing mushrooms, and of course for that they grow it straight horse manure, whereas you need to mix it. But mix it with the soil that's already there. You never want to take soil away, whether you're planting a tree or a shrub or fixing up your garden. And it's a great idea to continually add things to your soils. You can't hardly fix the problem in one season. However, towards fall, you can add some leaves. Just stay away from walnuts. Mm-hmm. Add some leaves in the fall and blend those into your soil, and they break down, and it just makes a natural compost.
You're basically augmenting the what's happening naturally in your area.
Absolutely, and you're making it happen. And again, you just can't fix these problems in an instant. You have to work at it year after year. I gardened for years and years, and I just loved fixing my soil up, and it just got better and better every year.
Wow.
But you have to do something.
Or you'll
have clay.
Well, Anita, best of luck, and we hope you're in and growing soon.
Yes.
We do have a caller on the line, and of course, we want you to join us again, 260-452-1185 or 800-471-9264. Our Facebook page is up and active, as is our Twitter account, and our email, middaymatters@nipr.fm. Let's open the phones and go to Hope. Oh, looks like Hope has left us, unfortunately. Hope, if you want to give us a call back, please do. There is nobody currently in the phone bank. Now, Doug, at the top of the show, you know, we were talking about pests and specifically about stink bugs.
Stink bugs, yeah.
You mentioned one remedy, vinegar and lemon juice, was
lemon
it?
Lemon juice,
but
right.
You have a few others for folks who have those unwelcome visitors.
Well, I do, and you know, a lot of times for any insect problem, whether it be spider mite, or white fly or whatever it might be, we've often talked about using soap and water, which of course lemon scented soap.
It seems like it comes up just about as frequently as
Mackinac. Yeah, well, it's a great product, and we keep it right on the shelf at the greenhouse. We use lemon scented soap a lot of times. It also kills fungus gnats. That's the little black gnats that come up out of your soil.
Yeah.
You can spray those with the soapy solution. I'm going to give you the breakdown. The soapy solution, or you can actually take a bucket of soapy water and pour it right through the pot. You might want to have to do this at the sink or the bathtub, of course, outside when the weather's better. Run that soapy water right through the soil, and I'll tell you, it chases the bugs out. They are gone, and so that's a great thing to do. But the simple mix is, and I always tell people, just put water in a thing and squirt some soap in there. You know, it's like washing your pots and pans. Nobody measures that stuff. But if you do, it's 2 cups of water to 10 drops of soap.
Easy enough.
Okay. 2 cups of water to 10 drops of liquid soap. If you make it 11 or 12, it's not going to make any difference. It's going to work just as well. But the soap also helps stick to the foliage, and you can spray the foliage of your plants with this. You can pour it through the water. You can spray your windowsills and doorways to help keep the insects from coming in. Time for more? You got callers.
Well, we have callers, so let's leave it
that.
On a cliffhanger.
I've got more little things
let's
here.
Let's leave
right.
it on a cliffhanger all for right. for the moment here. We'll get back to that list if we can a little bit later in the program. Right now, a few callers on the line. I think we have Hope back with us. Hope, are you there?
Yeah, I lost some signal. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
No
welcome
problem.
To the program.
Thank you. I've always listened to your show, and I really love it. So it taught me a lot. I actually live in a house. I'm renting a house right now, and it doesn't get a lot of sunlight, and I'd love to have a plant in the house, but I don't know what to start with. What would you suggest starting with if I want to do something like on my table or just, you know, a new house plant?
And Hope, are you thinking blooming?
I would like blooming, but I just want to start out learning to get my green thumb, actually.
Right. That's good, because most blooming plants, first of all, when you buy a blooming plant, it's in bloom, and it's not actually growing anymore. It's blooming, and when they're blooming, they're done. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not true of orchids or African violets, but it's true of most blooming plants, and when they're finished, they're finished, and you usually dump them and go get another one. But if you want to grow something and practice, you need to do it with houseplants. Peace lilies, they're one of the few houseplants that have blooms on them. They're white spikes, beautiful plant. A little difficult only in the fact that it has to be kept watered on a very regular basis, more than once a week. And if that's not a problem, you might be able to keep a peace lily around for a long time. The other thing is, even though house plants have the capability of living forever, you need to sort of set down your standards a little bit and say, well, let's see if I can keep it for 1 year, 2 years, or maybe three, and be happy with that, because that's more likely what would happen. Otherwise, it'll stretch, it'll start to look bad, and it's a good time to either do some major cutting back and repotting or dividing, or getting rid of it and starting with another fresh plant. The Schiffalera plant traditionally likes a lot of bright light.
The Schiffalera plant.
The Schiffalera.
All right. Just making sure.
The Schiffalera. then there's that takes bright light, and that's why we're not going to talk about that one. But the Hawaiian Schiffalera, or the miniature Schiffalera, or it's also known as Schiffalera arbicola, so we call them arbs, or arbicolas, those can tolerate a lot less light, and they seem to grow more rounded rather than tall. So you'd have much better luck with a miniature Schiffalera, and also they seem to be less bug-prone than the original Schiff. Okay, that's a good one. Weeping figs can be a real problem. That's kind of a challenge for a lot of people because, first of all, they will drop leaves, and that panics a lot of people. They see leaves fall, they jump to the fertilizer, and they just make problems worse. So maybe stay away from the weeping fig. And I'm okay. But there's another weeping fig type plant called an ali. The weeping fig that most people are familiar with is Ficus benjamina. Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to show off. it's just amazing I remember some of this. Ficus benjamina, but the one you want is called Ficus ali. A-L-I, much easier to grow. It doesn't really look like a weeping fig because it has long strapping leaves, whereas the fig has small rounded leaves, and those are the ones that are falling off all the time. You can just grab that plant, shake it, and it looks like fall.
Wow.
So that can be disappointing to people, but the ali is a good one.
So let's make all this compact. Top three suggestions for
Weeping Fig Ali, the Hawaiian Schiffalera, or, you know, the miniature Schiffalera. Those would be two great ones.
All right.
And there are a few others out there. Of course, the Chinese evergreen. Now, there's a foolproof plant. Takes very low light, very little water, the Chinese evergreen.
Sounds like my kind of plant.
Put that right up on top.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, great. Thank you so much.
You bet.
I hope we appreciate the call. Have a good day.
All right, bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. 260-452-1185 is the local number to call if you have a question or comment, perhaps a suggestion for our listeners this hour. And if you'd like to call us toll-free, it's 800-471-9264. We have time for one more caller before we get to a break here. Let's get Nick on the line. Nick, good afternoon. You're on the program.
Hello.
Hi, Nick.
I have a amaryllis. I'm trying to get it to bloom. I've had it for 3 years, and it hasn't bloomed on me.
It doesn't bloom. Are you giving it its rest period? It's got to have it.
Probably not.
Yeah.
Get it plenty of light.
This is probably the problem right here. The rest period generally starts 1st of September. You simply take the foliage and you cut it off, and then you put the plant away someplace dark. Now, a lot of people think you do this to poinsettias, but that's not true. But it is true to the amaryllis. Put it away someplace dark and forget about it for 6 to 8 weeks. I would recommend you still do this because we try to get them into bloom by Christmas, but you can get it into bloom, oh, say, by April. So cut all the foliage off of that bulb, stick it in a dark place, for 6 to 8 weeks, which would be what? February, March, about mid-March. And on mid-March, bring it back out of that dark place and water it. Now, when you put it away, no more water.
Okay.
You cannot water it even one time while it's put away. When you bring it out in mid to late March, give it a good drink of water and do not water it again till you see growth. I don't care if it gets dry again. Just don't water it again until you see growth. And once you see growth, then you can start to water it a little more often and take care of it like any other plant. Put it in a very sunny spot. By mid to late March, there'll be more sun. And it will grow for you, and it should bloom. But it's got to have that rest period.
Okay. Would I be able to do that again in September?
Yes. Yes,
okay.
The whole summer long, after it's through blooming this time, and hopefully it does bloom, the whole summer long, you keep the leaves growing. You'll cut the bloom stem off once it's finished, but you keep the leaves growing until September. And at that point, cut the leaves off straight across and put it away and let it run dry and dark for 6 to 8 weeks again. And then you should be able to bring it back out and get it back into bloom by Christmas.
Okay.
Yep.
Right. Great.
Give it a shot.
All right. Good.
All right. Thanks.
Good luck, Nick. We appreciate the call.
All right.
Yep.
Bye.
Good luck.
Have a good day. 260-452-1185. If you have a question or comment, maybe a tip to share with our listeners this hour. And, of course, we still want to hear stories of those unwelcome invaders who have come to your home to seek a little bit of shelter from the cold. When we come back, we'll hear from Pam, who's with us on the phone. Pam, we hope you'll stay with us through the break. Do stay with us. It's Midday Matters.
On Fresh Air, you'll hear conversations that you won't hear anywhere else.
Do you understand love?
Well, I understand caring. See, most of my relationships are more intellect, and to me, love is caring.
Posing questions to fascinating people like Temple Grandin and giving them the time to answer on Fresh Air.
Fresh Air, weekdays at 1 on WBOI.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Northeast Indiana Public Radio. I'm Sarah D'Elia with WBOY News. New Governor Mike Pence is expected to round out his team of top aides this week. The new governor's schedule for this afternoon showed him announcing more members of his administration. The Republican took office Monday as Indiana's 50th governor and has spent the week getting settled into the new job. Pence picked most members of his cabinet ahead of his inauguration, but Pence has yet to appoint the leaders of the Family and Social Services Administration, the Department of Child Services, and the Department of Agriculture. The Child Services and Social Services agencies both drew intense scrutiny and frequent criticism during the tenure of former Governor Mitch Daniels. State Superintendent Glenda Ritz says Indiana should not completely abandon the Common Core educational standards as in proposed legislation. As Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports, Ritz wants the Department of Education to evaluate the standards first.
The Common Core state standards are a set of nationally crafted academic standards adopted by 45 states, including Indiana. Ritz says the state should pause and review the standards.
First, I would establish a standards review committee, but expand that process to include public participation. The committee will then make recommendations to the Education Roundtable for review, and then the standards will come before the State Board of Education for adoption.
Indianapolis Republican Senator Scott Schneider is backing down from his original proposal to eliminate Common Core in Indiana. Instead, he says he will offer an amendment that will give the state more options.
If there are certain aspects of this that Indiana agrees to through our vetting process and a collaborative process are good, then we should have the flexibility to do that.
The Senate Education Committee took more than 3 hours of testimony on Schneider's bill Wednesday, though it did not take a vote or consider Schneider's amendment. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith.
U.S. Senator Dan Coats says he'll oppose President Barack Obama's call for an assault weapons ban, but Indiana gun rights activists are taking his stand with a grain of salt. Coats issued a statement Wednesday saying he would not support any proposals that endanger the rights of law-abiding gun owners. When he ran for the Senate in 2010, some gun rights proponents took Coats to task over his votes in favor of the Brady Bill and the assault weapons ban in the 1990s. Lafayette attorney and shooting enthusiast Kirk Freeman questioned Coats' gun rights position in 2010. He's skeptical of Coats' new stand and believes other gun owners also will be. A spokeswoman for Coats did not immediately return a phone call seeking comment. The Indiana Attorney General's office has filed a 66-count complaint against the Massachusetts pharmacy linked to an outbreak of fungal meningitis that has killed 7 people in Indiana and sickened more than 60 others. The complaint filed Wednesday against New England Compounding Center alleges 66 Indiana patients were harmed by the pharmacy's steroids used to treat back pain. The complaint asks the Indiana Board of Pharmacy to impose unspecified disciplinary sanctions and to pay prosecution costs. The board voted in November to suspend NECC's Indiana license. Attorney General Greg Zeller said the board will consider the complaint February 11th. The tainted steroids were distributed to 6 Indiana clinics before NECC recalled them. A message seeking comment was left with the NECC's attorney. You're listening to 89.1 FM WBOY. Now back to Midday Matters, Outer Spaces.
And a very good afternoon to you. It's a quarter till 1 o'clock, and you're tuned to Midday Matters Outer Spaces right here on 89.1 FM. I'm Sean Beter, along with Doug Hackbarth this hour, and we're taking your plant and garden questions. So give us a call if you have one, 260-452-1185, toll free at 800-471-9264. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or you can always send us a tweet at Midday Matters. We have some very patient callers on the line, along with a Facebook question we'll get to in just a moment here. Let's open the phones and go to Pam. Pam, good afternoon. You're on the program.
Hi.
Hi, Pam.
I had a question about zoysia grass, what to do with it when it's in your lawn. A couple of years ago, I bought a home where there turns out to be zoysia grass. It's very evident in the winter that there are patches of tan here and blocks of tan there. And
yeah, they look terrible, don't they?
It's evidently really good grass during the warm weather, but it looks so chaotic. I talked to a lawn service about trying to get rid of it, and he said, well, you know, I couldn't guarantee anything. Said it would have to be one of two approaches, remove the top 6 inches, you know, of the soil, because it has rhizomes that go deep and wide, and then replace it with 6 inches of other soil, or 3 complete dousings with Roundup. neither sounded very good. I'm thinking of maybe spreading the zoysia grass so that at least it looks compact. I understand
Well, zoysia grass
is resistant and so on.
Zoysia grass can be grown in this area, but it's really not the right kind of grass for our area. It's best in Florida or someplace warm, like you said. However, removing the soil sounds like a lot of work to me. And, you know, Roundup, of course, is the first thing that came to mind. But the second thing that came to mind, I think, is a better idea. There, we talked about this last week. There's a product called Grass Killer. It only kills grass and all kinds of grass. And I think this might be the product that you should use, because even though it will kill grass, you'll be able to replant. You're going to want to kill it. See, with Roundup, you can kill things and come back a couple weeks later and plant grass seed again. But you're going to want to kill this. I think I would use the Grass Killer. And I don't believe it has a residual lingering capability. Maybe it does. If it does, then I guess that could be
worth checking out the
bottle. that would be a problem if you want to replant grass seed there. So I guess we'd have to check that out. I'm sorry. I'm only used to trying to get rid of the grass and not trying to regrow it in the same spot. So I haven't really thought about that angle. We might have to check first and make sure that once you use the Grass Killer, that you'll be able to come back and replant. That's a good question. I'll have to check on that.
Is it a particular brand?
No, you know, Ortho and High Yield and everybody packages up their own version. I said one's called Grass Killer. It used to be called Post. Then they changed the name to Grass Killer, which meant more to people than the word Post. And then someone suggested a product called Over the Top, which is a newer version of the same type of product. So, yeah, Over the Top. We'll have to get a hold of a bottle of this stuff and read it and see what it says about replanting.
But it is a good grass during the summer, right?
It can make a great grass in the summertime, but it's a specialty thing. You know, it's almost like trying to grow a golf course or something. You know, it's not just for everyone to grow. I knew a guy in Wayndale that used to have a yard of zoysia grass, and he loved it. I mean, he just, like, loved this thing. But it's a specialty item, and the average bear does not want to mess with zoysia grass, really. Because it always looks horrible in the fall and winter. It just gets so brown. Yeah, I mean, it's just plain ugly the rest of the season. And it looks great in the summer.
Pam, you're not in the golf course business, are you?
No, I'm in the front yard.
Yeah, I think if you want to have a nice looking yard even in the winter time, you should probably stay away from zoysia.
Well, it's there though.
Yeah,
it's a thing.
We need to get rid of it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Pam, check out those products and let us know how it goes.
I'm going to check out the one and see what it says about replanting.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Pam, good luck. Thank you very much. We appreciate the call. All right. Bye bye. 260-452-1185. If you have a question or comment for Doug Hackbarth, just about 10 minutes left in the program here. If you have a tip to share with our listeners this hour, we'd love to hear it as well. And if you have a good story about invaders in your home during the wintertime, we were talking earlier about stink bugs. If there are others, we'd love to hear it and how you got rid of them as well.
Right.
We have another caller on the line here. Let's go to, let's see, it looks like we've got George. George, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Good afternoon. I have a orchid houseplant, and what I'm trying to do is make it bloom, and I don't really know what I need to do to actually take care of it, because it has a bunch of runners also on it.
Coming out the sides down at the bottom. Yeah, then those are fine. Just don't even pay any attention to those runners. But the orchid plant, more or less you just have to have patience, and one day when you least expect it, up shoots a spike, and the next thing is full of buds, and you have flowers. It just happens that way. I think a lot of orchid hobbyists grow several orchid plants, and it's mostly so that they can always have something in bloom. But there's no magical steps to bringing it into bloom. Watering is the key. Soil is very important that you always use orchid soil, not regular potting soil. We always say what we use at the greenhouse is magical as far as a potting soil, but I wouldn't use it in orchid growing. I would get the orchid soil. It says it right on the bag, and it doesn't matter if it's real barky or if it's less barky. If it says orchid soil, it'll be good. And that's what you want to use. Now, it probably is already in that, so that's fine. But this is information for if someday you repot it.
No, I did that already. I used regular soil.
Yeah, that's the bad thing right there. You need to repot it again with orchid soil.
Okay.
And then the orchid soil is made in such a way that it holds just the right amount of moisture and the rest goes away. Regular soil will hold moisture way too long and your orchid plant will turn yellow and you'll have a lot of problems that way. So, and then, of course, there's always the commercials for the orchids that say, just add ice. And I like those commercials. I think they're kind of cool because if you have an orchid plant, they're telling you to just add a couple of ice cubes about once a week, and that's all the moisture it needs. It's good advice. So when I water my orchids at the shop, I try to imagine just about how much water would two ice cubes melted be, and that's how much I give the orchid plants. So I'm not using ice cubes, but I'm using the equivalent of that. And it works quite well, about once a week, thereabouts. But you got to have orchid soil. There's your big problem right there.
All right. Okay. Thank you.
You bet.
We appreciate the call. Good luck, George, and have a good day. 260-452-1185 if you have a question or comment in the last few minutes of our program here. In just a moment, we'll go to Greg. First, though, Doug, I wanted to get to this question on Facebook that we were talking about over the break. Daniel says, if the winter is a great time to plan landscaping design, which software might be available, consumer or professional? And if we wanted a local or regional theme design with indigenous plants, soils, critters, even local geological features or stones and rocks, what would you recommend? And we were talking about this. You don't use landscaping software necessarily.
I don't. I'm not officially a landscaper.
Mm-hmm. But I wanted to put this out to our listeners who are on Facebook. If you have some suggestions for Daniel, we would love your help on this matter. And I think we'll have Laura with us in a few weeks as well. Yeah. Hopefully we can put that question
for a good website.
To her. Well, good software for
landscaping
design.
Designs.
Yeah,
and I tried to get it on the computer during the commercial break, and of course I was trying it on the iPhone, and it just kept saying, "Well, which site do you want?" It didn't give me a choice. I said, "I don't know. I don't know which site. I want you to find several for me and let me choose." But it didn't do it, and I didn't have a lot of time.
Well, we love it if our listeners if you've used landscape software, get on our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/middaymatters, and give us a hand with this one. Get some suggestions for Daniel. And as I mentioned, we can put that question to Laura Stein, who will be with us
in
a few weeks as well. We have a caller on the line here, Greg on line one. Good afternoon. You're on the program.
Hi, Greg.
Yeah, good afternoon. I've got a Canadian hemlock. I planted about 10 years or 6 years ago. It's about 10 feet tall. I've got something chewing the bark off on the lower branches.
Hmm.
Probably rabbits.
Probably. Yeah, probably
what
so.
What do I do?
Well, you can wrap the bottom of that, and I'm not suggesting wrap it tight because they used to sell tree wrap, which was almost like a thick burlap type material that you could go out and wrap the trunk with. That's not what I'm suggesting. I'm suggesting that you go out and in packing devices, with packing stuff, you'll see sheets of thin, flexible styrofoam. What a great product that would be. I'm showing Sean how that works. So you take that flexible styrofoam, you just simply wrap it around the trunk and staple it together, and it's strong enough to stand when it hits the ground, and yet it won't collapse in the rain because it's styrofoam.
Huh.
And it's a beautiful product. I noticed it when we were getting trees shipped in out of Colorado, and that they would come in with the styrofoam wrap around them. I thought, what a clever idea. And it would keep the deer off, the rabbits off. They're not going to lift it up and get under it. So it's a simple, and it lets the air in there, and it lets for the expansion of the trunk, and it's just no problem at all. That's what I would look for.
They're actually chewing on the branches, not on the trunk itself.
Yeah, that'd be a little different then. I don't know. You ever think of trimming the branches slightly higher? It sounds they must be fairly close to the ground then.
Yes, they are.
Yeah. That would be the only suggestion, is to cut some of the lowest branches off. I know most of those types of trees, you cut the low branches off, and then the ones that are left, they start sagging down later on anyway. But I think once you get the rabbits used to not coming around, they'll forget a year later or 2 years later, and they don't come around then when the branches are sagging again. But, you know, I can understand if you don't want to cut the bottom branches off. That was a bit of an argument at our place. We had trees, and I loved to cut them off. I hated them down on the ground. And someone else said, yeah, I like them to the ground. Well, I don't. They trap leaves, and rabbits can nest under there, and the whole works. I like it open.
Yeah.
So it's a matter of taste, but that's the only solution I can see, is to simply trim some of those lower branches off or just let the rabbits eat them.
Okay, that won't hurt the tree chewing on the bark.
It would hurt the tree if they were chewing on the trunk, but if they're hitting the branches, it won't hurt the tree, just the branch.
Okay.
Yeah.
Greg, good luck, and we appreciate the call.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a very good day. Doug, we've just about reached the end of the program here, just about 90 seconds. It's gone already.
Amazing.
90 seconds left in the show. In the last little bit of time we have available, we're in mid-January now. Not necessarily a lot to do outdoors. What would you recommend folks do if they want to use their green thumb in the wintertime now during this set?
Yeah, I think they're going to have to move inside for the most part. There's just very little to do outside at this time of the year, and then the weather gets colder yet. And so that's that. But just three more things on the stink bugs, three other home remedies, and I won't get into details, but garlic is one. You mix it up with water, and you can spray it on the foliage. Mint is another one. You can simply sprinkle mint around if you're growing it or buying it at the grocery store. They don't like mint. And catnip's the other one. But for the most part, they were talking about putting the catnip outside around plants, and that would be a summer thing.
Right. So we had catnip, we had mint, we had garlic, we had liquid, soap and water.
Yep, soap and water.
And lemon juice and vinegar, all potential household remedies keep those stink bugs out.
Those stinking bugs away. We don't need no stinking bugs here.
Well, we have reached the end of the program, and not a minute too soon, the jokes are coming out now. Doug Hackbarth, as always, thank you so much for being with us on Midday Matters.
Today. My pleasure.
I'd love to thank our listeners as well for your continued listenership and, of course, for getting involved in the program. We do appreciate you being with us. I'm Sean Beter, and this is Northeast Indiana Public Radio, broadcasting from the Madge Rothschild Studios at 89.1 HD Channel 1, streaming online at nipr.fm. This is WBOY Fort Wayne and WBKE North Manchester, a service of Manchester University. We're coming up on 1 o'clock. Fresh Air with your local host, Katie Anderson, is coming up next. Have a good day.